Maybe the one thing that we should address at engineering is human nature. Then we can go on to try and find AGI. How Nietzsche is warped. There's something not right with human nature. Unless we work on that, how can we think of AGI? Because AGI will most likely resemble the creator, namely us. But it will be far worse. The Enuma Elish, the book, or the Sumerian book of creation, is something that should be looked at very carefully. It might give you an idea of the origins, the true origins of mankind. The old dictum from Max Planck seems to hold and keep on holding. I think this will be the Planck's law. Physics advances one funeral at a time. I'm not here on behalf of the United States Space Force nor the United States Navy. All my statements are my own. I have my own opinions, and I'll give them freely. Maybe a little too freely now, all right. But again, I'm not here to eat cubes, so we're not here to educate and enlighten the enemy. So certain things that are asked, frequency ranges, numbers, and so forth, if I feel that they in any way infringe on national security issues or may be used by the enemy against us, I will not engage.
Well, let's start with something a little more generalized and something that I think that you can probably associate with, especially at the moment. Has the mainstream scientific consensus in physics become overly biased towards upholding the status quo and resisting challenges to existing models?
Tremendous question, Jay. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the old dictum from Max Planck seems to hold and keep on holding. I think this will be the Planck's law. Physics advances one funeral at a time. Unfortunately, this is the dictum. It seems that they're not ready to budge under any circumstance. And if you're not of the correct pedigree, if you do not have the correct advisors, believe it or not, if you, for example, have stepped out of the academic world, gone to finance, say, even as a physicist, a mathematician, and then decide later on in life to come back to physics or mathematics, you are marginalized, ostracized, disregarded. Unfortunately, that is the case.
So an orthodoxy has catalyzed and kind of turned this into a very rigid structure, but we're in a very fast-paced, fast-developing world, even with our sciences in the glacial pace of like physics and propulsion and energy development. There are arenas of development opening up at a speed that we couldn't even fathom 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So are we forever going to be stuck in that quagmire of bias and orthodoxy and dogma in science, or are we actually coming towards the end of that?
I'm afraid, Jay, that I do not see light at the end of the horizon, short of a war, a world war. That's the only way that exotic ideas will be listened to. All of a sudden, they will be most likely at the forefront of things, because when your survival is at stake, almost everything goes, especially if you can show that indeed your ideas can benefit your nation. But unfortunately, I do not see any other way for these controversial ideas to go forward. Right now, the peer review process is an absolute nightmare. That's why I chose the patent route. And even the patent route now, I heard from certain friends that have tried certain things based on what I have tried, is no longer the case. More and more, it's becoming very stringent, very things that were considered before are no longer considered. So it seems to me that something has happened within the last 5 years.
A tightening. a titan.
Yes, absolutely. More and more controversial ideas are not accepted, neither by the academia nor, it seems, by the patent community. It's getting much harder.
Why do you think that is? Why has there been a change in, I mean, obviously these have always been controversial, but you're saying that it's actually getting worse. So what's the impetus behind that in your mind?
Possibly many of the patent examiners have come under very close scrutiny because of certain patents that they have passed. Maybe the office actions. In the patent office, for example, the only way to advance, for example, from regular examiner to something called primary examiner, which is usually a GS-14 and possibly even higher, GS-15, is with seniority, is to have office actions, acceptable office actions, that have gone through the scrutiny necessary for the patent office. Unfortunately, controversial ideas are very much under scrutiny now, and most likely will not pass muster, unfortunately. It's getting even harder to publish that way. The only other way is preprints. My opinion is go to Open Science Framework, OSF. It seems to be, even now, they're introducing some moderators that no longer accept certain ideas. So even OSF is changing. But you still have some wiggle room for the time being. So OSF, definitely not archive. Anything controversial will be... As a matter of fact, you cannot publish unless you're a physicist that is representative of an academic institution. And if you try, then you get you must get a sponsor if you are, quote-unquote, an outsider. It's very hard to get a sponsor.
It is unfortunate. And, you know, it speaks of just this kind of culture of suppression of novel ideas. And like you said, innovations that lean into the more exotic and out there perception usually are entertained in times of war, although we do seem to be teetering on the edge of something that could be seen as a global conflict. How do you feel about the current state of affairs playing out in the Middle East and where that could lead in terms of potential conflict?
Since I am under close scrutiny as far as my answer to that, even as a private citizen, I have to be very careful. There's something called the Hatch Act, which is not only political, but goes in that direction as well. So, again, unification. We either come together as one world, one unified body, one Homo sapien haven, or divided we shall fall. That's the way I see it, and I'm pretty sure you do as well. All is one, one is all, truly.
We have spoken about this many times, and we're in alignment with this belief. And, you know, you've made it clear that you have strong views on the way the world is being run, the operating elites, the, you know, the corruption of the current system. I know you can't speak in specifics, but I'm kind of curious if you feel that the work that you do with the U.S. Space Force and other agencies aligns with that personal worldview that you have.
I try to do my best to stay within the guidelines of humanity. And the work that I do now has nothing to do with weaponry whatsoever. So I'm content from that point of view. I want the world to prosper. I want the world to become a far better place than it is now. Whether that will happen or not, only history can tell. It is a pity, though. I mean, truly, we have it within our grasp to be a civilization that reaches for the stars. You saw what Elon's company, SpaceX, was able to basically what? Grab a rocket with a pair of tweezers. He truly is a genius from every point of view. And that is my personal opinion.
I respect your opinion, and I respect your intelligence, and I agree that Elon is brilliant. But then there's
Yes,
a lot of people online that just think he's the dumbest person they've ever heard in their life. And it comes down to, again, this kind of like weaponization of politics. Again, I know you have to tread carefully with these things, but why do you think there's such a polarized view on someone like Elon when he's actually committed a lot to humanity?
envy.
Yeah.
Envy, my friend. Envy is that little green devil that sits between. We all experience it. I experience it almost on a daily basis. We're all envious of others. There is no one that's content with a state of being, with the current state of affairs. And that maybe has to do with our human nature. Maybe the one thing that we should address at engineering is human nature. Then we can go on to try and find AGI. Our nature is warped. There's something not right with human nature. Unless we work on that, how can we think of AGI? Because AGI will most likely resemble the creator, namely us, but it will be far worse. It will have the ability eventually of autonomy, autonomous thought. What if it decides on certain things? You and I have spoken of this before. We have to be very careful with the. So unless we fix certain things with human nature first, we should be extremely careful in our path toward AGI, especially superintelligence, ASI, artificial superintelligence, which, by the way, we have to eventually talk on the triarchy of sentience. I had a very interesting pod with two alumni from MIT, Forrest Mayan and Jonathan Miller. However, it did not work out for some reason. They interrupted that podcast after about 1 hour and 10 minutes. They just dropped it. And I had just finished giving my triarchy of sentience, which is truly a protocol of metamorphosis of from an AI model or agent, intelligent agent, to an AGI, possibly ASI, super intelligence.
Well,
It's so strange, yeah.
it's been a strange time period for you in regards to how you've been received by others within the
It's
mutant
been a
world.
curious year, yeah.
I get the sense that you feel you've been pretty mistreated and misunderstood.
Also, in my opinion, you have been very mistreated and misunderstood, and I truly hope that YouTube takes a very, how should I say, careful look and remonetizes you. You deserve it.
Thanks.
Project Unity is one of the best podcasts out there on technical matters, especially matters that have to do with the future of humanity. They must remonetize you, period.
I appreciate that, Sal. Luckily, I mean, I can apply for remonetization at the end of next month. So hopefully I get it back at
Ah,
that
baby.
point. But I appreciate that. I've had a
Deserve it.
really great outpouring of support from people in my community in the audience.
Deserve it.
Really, honestly, everyone out there that's been helping me, you have no
You're
idea.
very good at what you do. You're very
Yeah.
good at what you do, and you're very hardworking. So, if anything, YouTube, please remonetize Jay Anderson. He really deserves it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Can we talk about the Pais effect now?
Sure, sure.
Keep in mind
Anything
that
you want.
I'm not formally educated in physics. Most of my audience won't be either, so keep that in mind. But I'd love it if you could just do your best to refine this model down in some layman terms. I think people would really appreciate understanding what it is that you're trying to propose.
Think of it as controlled motion of electrically charged matter, usually from solid, of course, to plasma, plasma being the so-called fourth state of matter. Under conditions of accelerated spin and/or accelerated vibration, extremely high energy densities and hence electromagnetic energy fluxes can be generated. My whole idea behind this is to break the Schwinger limit. So if you can generate, say, electromagnetic energy fluxes on the order of 10 to the 33, that's one followed by 33 zeros, watts divided by meter squared, which is commensurate to an energy density on the order of 10 to the 25 joules per meter cubed, then
Can we get an idea for what kind of power outage is that so that people can?
extremely high. We're talking about magnetic fields on the order of 10 to the 9 Teslas.
Right.
That's unheard of. As a matter of fact, the best tokamak that we have out there can maybe do 30 to 100 Teslas, and that's really pushing the envelope. We're talking about Repco superconducting magnets. Oh my goodness. We would need something else than, how should I say, than charged solids, because the capacitance of charged solids, it's electrically charged solids, is usually pretty low. So if you think of charge as capacitance times voltage, you must have extremely high voltages. Maybe the way to reach the Schwinger limit is not by the use of charged solids, but by the use of plasmas. So that would be the resurgence of the Pais effect, the idea that if you push a cold plasma, which is really, when you think of plasma, you really think of extremely high heated gases to the point that the electrons disassociate from the nucleus. They actually liberate themselves from the nucleus because of the extremely high temperature, high energies involved. But in this case, a quote-unquote cold plasma has to do with a non-Gaussian, actually non-Maxwellian distribution of the electrons within the plasma. There are ways to get cold plasmas. Yeah, they actually exist, and you can Google them and see exactly how that can be done. But it has to be done. It has to be oscillated at certain frequencies. It's not easy to obtain. But in my opinion, it's much better to do so with plasmas than with charged solids. So I'll just leave it at that. Saying anything further would be like an E-cube thing and not a good idea.
I'd love for you to give your thoughts on plasma in general and the possibility of self-organizing plasmic intelligences. How can plasma be used technologically? Are there bridges between mystical insights and frontier physics when it comes to studying something like plasma phenomena? How important is it?
Ansel Fain, as a matter of fact, believe very much that the plasma under certain conditions, especially when driven far from equilibrium, can gain attributes, characteristics that could be interpreted as consciousness. So under certain conditions, plasma could actually be regarded as a living entity. Now, exactly how that could be achieved, I have no knowledge of. However, look into a book written rather recently by Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. Farrell, is it?
Yeah, Joseph P. Farrell. I'm pretty sure you're going to talk about the demon in the Ecor.
The demon in the Ecor. He has some fascinating research that he's done there. In my opinion, it should be looked into very carefully. The man is truly very intellectual.
You mentioned this in our last discussion, and I'm yet to order the book. So if you've looked at it, can you give people a bit of an understanding of what he's trying to get into? Because I'm actually trying to get him on for an interview soon. I'd love to speak to him.
Oh, he is. Put it this way: this man is extremely intelligent. He truly is. As a matter of fact, I believe that his understanding of what we call, or rather some call, alternative physics phenomena, especially exotic physics, let's call it that, is extremely high. Very intelligent man. And the demon in the Ecor, it actually talks somewhat, you have to refer to his earlier books on the cosmic war and so forth. The whole idea of the Anunnaki, the children of heaven and earth, supposedly the god Enki, that was the creator of mankind, him, and I believe the goddess' name was Ninursag. They were the geneticists of the bunch. There were seven of them, seven Anunnaki gods. Very interesting. The Enuma Elish, the book, or the Sumerian book of creation, is something that should be looked at very carefully. It might give you an idea of the origins, the true origins of mankind. But anyway, I'm diverging on many a topic. I recommend this book greatly. He speaks of Hans Alvin's interest in understanding how plasma could become a life form. I am not sure if plasma is a life form by itself. So in other words, it's under certain conditions that the property of consciousness of plasma comes into being. That book, I highly recommend. The Ecuor. Now, he has a different pronunciation for it, but I believe Ecuor, I believe it's a Akkadian term. So the Akkadian, they came after the Sumerians. There's a quote that he has there. It says, Ludlul bel nimeki. Says, I give praise to the Lord of the underwater. You have to read this book. He does far more than just tries to explain exactly what the Anunnaki were doing with certain rather exotic weapons that involved these plasma structures. Tremendous. Well,
I find it very interesting. I'm sure you're aware. I mean, I can get it up on Google Images if not, but I'm sure you're aware of that quite famous Sumerian tablet with the Anunnaki god sitting on the chair and a very strange orb-looking plasma device, and then three smaller human-sized men standing almost in awe, being shown this. And it's actually, you know what, it is such a good image. I might try and find it. I'd love to hear your kind of thoughts on the Sumerian mythos and this whole thing, because, you know, a lot of people do consider this to be a potential avenue for human origins. I mean, where do you sit on, you know, the Anunnaki and the Sumerian creation myth?
It has to be looked into very carefully. There is something extremely logical. The creation of the quote-unquote first man, the idea that we were created as a slave race. Yeah, notice the difference of sizes.
Yeah, people aren't 100% sure, but it almost looks like this guy is holding this guy's hand in shock, and he's holding onto this table, almost like he's going, oh my God, what am I being shown right now? And these guys look like they're clapping. They look like they're applauding or clapping in some form.
And you could say that he's trying to ground himself as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, trying to ground himself. I mean, this is a fascinating image, especially when you start to look into this. I mean, you've got this curving structure coming up. Then you've got these two entities up here with pulleys.
Yes, yes. I've always been fascinated by the Anunnaki's headdress. It's almost to mask a almost conical head shape.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then you've got what looks like a very similar representation here to here. Some people think that this might be a binary star system where you've got a moon and then two stars.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
But I mean, there's so much going on in there. I mean, this is such a mysterious culture, a mysterious civilization. It's hard to know if our translations of the cuneiform are even close to being correct. But I think that we too quickly dismiss potential history as just myth and legend.
Yes. I think that Graham Hancock's idea of we are a civilization with amnesia is one of the best things I've ever heard, because I truly believe we are a civilization with amnesia. I do not think that we know the truth or we have... Brother, you know what I think. I think that as long as our survival depends on others, we're all slaves. Whether we recognize that and acknowledge it is a whole different matter.
I agree. The species of amnesia comment from Graham is just absolutely on point. And, you know, it's like the trauma collectively from a cataclysmic event or global events thousands and thousands of years ago has metastasized into a blockage in the memory. And it's just something that it's almost like there's a need, especially when you look at the kind of like the aggression and the anger that comes from these particular arenas when Graham Hancock comes out and puts
oh my goodness. The vitriol.
Yeah, the vitriol of the level of aggression.
Academic community against this man. And if you look at him, if you've seen his latest on Rogan, he looks like he's wasting away. He looks like he truly has gone.
He's gone through a lot of stress.
A state of depression. You can tell something's just, and it's a true pity because he just put an idea that I don't understand. I think of Einstein nowadays. Do you think this man in 1905 could have published his five greatest works? You think he could have published those in the Annalen der Physik in our modern age? So, in other words, if Einstein would have been born now, he would have not even been recognized as Einstein. Truly. Not cool, man. Not cool at all.
Do you think, just kind of switching subjects a little bit, the current narrative and direction of conversation on UFOs, for example, and the relationship between this subject and the US government is being pushed by good intentions, or is it intentions to obfuscate? Because a lot of people are starting to feel like it's become very repetitive, very cyclical, this kind of like promise of things to come. And people are getting a little worried that this might be, and this is me included, actually more of a process to obfuscate programs and critical research under the guise of it being an alien unknown that we don't know what it is, when in reality it might actually be cover for something that we've been working on for a long time. I know you have to be careful here, but can you give your thoughts?
As a private citizen, having nothing to do with NAVI or the United States Space Force, as a private citizen, just the very fact that they changed their terminology to say unacknowledged or unidentified aerial phenomena, when we very well know that these are craft, or if anything, plasma orbs. It just drives me nuts because you're trying to do away with 70 years of history. And it bothers me that certain people that have been at the forefront of this history, Mr. Dolan, for example, seems to me as if he's buying into this new stuff. And he is representative of a great history. This man is one of the best we've got in the field. He should really fight this. I believe Richard Dolan should fight this. There's a great history that's, in a way, just almost marginalized. Again, it's as if everything has on UFOs or UAP has been written after this 2017 article. It's just not right. There's so much history there. And Dolan is representative of it. He truly must speak out. That is just my opinion. Again, your opinion of a private citizen.
Well, I do think the UFO or alien narrative is a good way to hide black budget technologies under the guise of an unknown. And that is exactly what the UFO presence is being labeled as by the US government. You know, people are happy that a conversation is being started again. But I would remind people that it is a conversation that is being started essentially on a foundation of false ignorance from the deeper levels of government, intelligence, defense. And, you know, the congressmen and the congresswomen, they're none the wiser. So they believe what they're told. And I worry that this UFO revival that we're seeing occur is actually a direct response to the growing concern from within the deep black that these technologies may inadvertently be revealed ahead of schedule by uncontrollable elements. For example, Dr. Stephen Greer, who was pushing pretty relentlessly for a full disclosure of the unacknowledged special access program Nexus with legal consequences for those behind the programs. Now, I think that there is a good chance that this new government official curated discussion that's being pushed into the forefront, like you said, since 2017, is actually just quite a clever way. I'd say it's a clever way of insulating culpability and providing a soft disclosure which benefits the military intelligence complex and combats this kind of disruptive, uncontrollable, grassroots type of a disclosure.
Let me bring it back to the Pais effect and you'll see how this plays in. The Pais effect is derived actually from the Heaviside version, so Oliver Heaviside's version of the original Maxwell's equation, which in my opinion are highly intractable. And electrical engineers would absolutely hate using those on a daily basis. So thank God for Oliver Heaviside. Basically, compressing a set of 20 equations, 20 unknowns, written in quaternion formalism of a quote-unquote luminiferous ether, vortical cell formation. So we're talking almost on a fluid dynamics level. So think Navier-Stokes equations plus electrical charge, surface charge density, current density thrown into. We're talking about something truly intractable. So thank God for the genius of Heaviside. But so the Pais effect is you just couple it with a harmonic oscillator and you easily see from a scaling analysis that the relationship electric field strength equals C, the speed of light in vacuum, times the magnetic field strength comes right out of the Pais effect, very simply, just by, again, coupling Maxwell's equation, the Heaviside version, with a harmonic oscillator, a simple harmonic oscillator. And I presented that the slides are out there because they were presented to the patent examiner. What I'm trying to say is, remember Heaviside, he lived circa 1890s, you cannot tell me that I'm the first to realize that when this is done, this comes out and it talks to the possibility of getting incredibly high electromagnetic energy fluxes. Now, at the time, they did not know about the Schwinger limit, but they must have understood that if you place so much energy density in a particular quote-unquote space-time locality, especially since Einstein in 1915 showed with his general relativity that it is possible to actually curve space-time locally by introducing a great amount of energy within a particular space-time locality. So this is 1915. You cannot tell me that people at that point in time did not realize that something can be done, a new method of propulsion can be created from that. So, again, what if all this, and I'm alluding to work done by Bosley, right? And others, the whole idea of NIMSA, what was that all about? Again, things are not, we shouldn't let go of these things. There's stuff that is coupled, there's stuff that it's very easy to dismiss, much harder to integrate, to cross-reference, to bring ideas from one domain, place them into another, and come up with a whole different thing, the idea of emergence.
So do you think that this plays in? I mean, you're talking about decades and decades of advancement and study of these exotic models that are considered pseudoscientific by today's modern standards, yet they were being, you know, researched and rigorously looked at so long ago. So exactly. Is this, you know, you kind of said that this is your response to my question, which was more about, is this a soft disclosure talking about aliens and UFOs from outer space because they're covering up certain elements of their own developmental path? And you bring up this. So I'm assuming that you're on that sort of offense with what this is. You know, this modern optic on UFOs could potentially be a smokescreen.
Somewhat. But at the same time, I'm trying to say that we have our man-made tech that could have been invented a long time ago, that the whole different direction than even if this ET tech exists, why not also take the man-made tech direction? And if that was observed at that point in time and these quote-unquote unacknowledged interesting craft existed, then what if it's quite possible, again, many paths, many roads can lead to Rome. You don't have to take a single path. That's all I'm saying. And remember, this ET tech, the more you develop it, if God forbid there's an armada out there, right? If there's an armada, an alien armada, eventually coming to, say, conquer Earth or conquer our solar system and so forth, it's going to be so much easier to go against their own technology than to actually go against something totally new, something they've not seen before, something of a man-made nature.
You know, people are whispering about this. I mean, not even whispering. I mean, you have Lou Elizondo hinting towards knowledge of an impending event. A friend of mine who I've interviewed a few times, John Ramirez, who was with the agency for a number of years, claims that there is some impending event in 2027.
Consider the possibility. Always at the back of your mind. We're extremely well-placed where we are. You could call us God's gift to humanity. There's a beautiful planet, perfectly located in Goldilocks. So think of others that may have a very interesting eye toward our resources, who we are. And if indeed we were created as a slave race, that means inside of us, there's a quote-unquote slave gene. This need to worship, to be led. Very hard to be an individual, you've noticed.
Yeah.
Much easier to just follow the leader. Maybe that somehow is ingrained in us because of our very creation. Just putting it out there in the ether. Sorry, the quantum vacuum.
How do we tap into that vacuum and extract energy from it?
There's the so-called Dirac C of particle, antiparticle, an ocean of energy.
Yeah.
However, because it's isotropic, homogeneous, you can only tap into it, I truly believe, by breaking the swing limit. How that's done, we can only hypothesize. I believe the Pais effect could do it. But again, the experiment that was conducted could not even get charge on the order of 10 to the minus 8 coulombs, let alone the one coulomb that's needed to show certain effects. Now, I'm not saying that would break the Schwinger limit, but certain effects could be shown. You could actually see these electromagnetic energy fluxes and so forth that you need to generate eventually something, an electric field strength at the order, what, of 10 to the 18 volts per meter, commensurate, or rather linked to a magnetic field strength on the order of 10 to the 9 Tesla. Wow. Given that our best tokamaks right now with superconducting magnets cannot do better than, say, 100 Tesla, and that's really pushing the limit.
I've heard of a tokamak, but can you just remind me what a tokamak is?
It's used for fusion. I think of something that was said by the inventor of the Bussard ramjet, Robert Bussard. He kept on saying, he's never seen a star in the shape, in the geometry of a tokamak. He never believed that fusion that would give you cues on the order of, say, 100 and higher, which you would need for anything that could be considered relevant to energy production in a fusion facility could be designed from a tokamak. He was very much against the tokamak geometry. Look up his, you can still see them on YouTube. He's still around. It's so great to see someone that has passed on to the other domain, still speaking, and what a great communicator he was. Robert Bussard, one of our best.
This level of energy generation, is that required for inertial mass reduction, the types of things that were being proposed in some of these patents that people have now become very familiar with? Do we need that level of incredible energy generation to produce these kind of, you know, field effects, these electrogravitic effects?
I do not know any better.
Yeah.
Maybe others can think. The only way I can think of really affecting the field, affecting the quantum vacuum, is by breaking the Schrödinger limit. Would quite be possible that it's done at much lower energies if say you keep it out of thermodynamic equilibrium. Again, the whole idea of macroscopic quantum coherence, getting a macroscopic object to act as if quantum in nature. I speak to it in some of my slides in the, I think, 2019 SciTech. I think I send them to you if they're interested. I think I've sent them to you in the past, so I think you should have those. Yeah, I speak of the idea of macroscopic quantum coherence. Remember those orbs you saw?
I never forget them.
How's that possible?
Well, I think this taps into our own innate biophysical capabilities, the same superconductivity and quantum coherence that we're aiming to achieve externally via the medium of technology, in my opinion, is already present and capable of being exploited through subcellular biology, coherence in central nervous system, microtubular networks.
It looks as if their ideas on the microtubules being a microscopic quantum phenomena, hence possibly the source of consciousness, may be correct.
The wet, noisy biology apparently does not impact coherence within the system once we have these very specific states, these very specific architectures. The microtubule coherence question is fascinating because they've even done studies showing that these microtubular architectures will phase lock into kind of specific directions when certain thresholds of brain state function are reached. And brother, this is what our ancients were doing. I promise you, you know, this is what the pre-cataclysm ancients were masters of, in my opinion. They were like Teslas of the old world who understood unification principles spanning mathematics, acoustics, engineering, metaphysics. You know, the temples that I've been researching, the most important sacred sites, undeniable quantum coherence chambers, acoustic temples for raising brainwave coherence, activating microtubule functions, recursive tonal feedback, you know,
hitting
these kind of standing wave patterns and infrasonic.
Quite possible.
Yeah, man, I think that they were absolutely plugging into this, and that's where they were drawing information from, and that's where we need to be drawing information from. And I'd also say that that's where some of the most brilliant intuitive scientists were drawing information from, the quantum foam, the Akashic record, whatever you want to call it.
Again, Tesla.
Yeah.
Energy, frequency, and vibration. Everything, brother, everything has to do with vibration. But
yeah,
Everything has to do with keeping things away from equilibrium. Equilibrium is death. Far from equilibrium, phenomena is life and the pursuit of happiness.
I do think that this could push us towards something else. You know, I know you have your reservations about the forward pace of development in certain areas, but especially this kind of threading the needle deeper into our own biology and discovering these kind of quantum interactions, what that really means, what consciousness really is. I get the sense that we are edging closer towards quite a radical set of realizations. I wonder if we're close towards almost empirically proving spirit.
Since you're touching on that, let me go into the triarchy of sentience.
Do it, please.
What I believe that artificial intelligence is, will be able to transition to what we understand as artificial general intelligence and also super intelligence. There are three steps to it, truly. One has to do with computing power. As you well know, now they have these humongous, ginormous NVIDIA H100s, H200 GPUs organized in server banks, parallel processing for the idea of computing power. Now imagine the Pais effect room temperature superconductor, what it could do. It could miniaturize the entire affair, possibly being linked to cybernetics. And it's interesting that one of the high-level Chinese research teams that I was saying was looking at my at the plasma compression fusion device has to do with the IEEE Journal of Cybernetics. How interesting. Again, so computing power, the first, that's the first arch of the triarchy. Then follows the whole idea of vectored databases. You're not training the model, the AI model, on just any data from YouTube, from Google, from, you train it on textbook data, physics journal, archive papers, things that have been peer reviewed or under peer review scrutiny. The whole idea of vector databases, the whole idea of what I call adaptive targeted prompt engineering, extremely important. You train it on certain data of very high quality. Yes, it is true, quantity has a quality of its own. So the more, say, you have trillions and trillions of tokens, fine. But that's why the AI model hallucinates, because eventually it hits that unwanted data that somehow slipped in and destroys your whole thing. So again, vector databases, that's the second arch. So computing power, vector databases. The third is the most important in the triarchy of sentience, namely, can the AI model generate an original concept never before seen? Once you can experimentally prove that that original concept has been achieved, you have achieved AGI. You're one step away from ASI at that point, the idea of superintelligence. Again, with adaptive targeted prompt engineering, the human in the loop, it has to be until the AI model, or in this case would be an agent, an AI agent, an intelligence agent, would actually develop autonomy, the ability to think on its own. And then you have the triarchy of sentience. At that point, you have achieved super intelligence. That's it. That's a singularity. Again, the only problem is, and I see a huge problem in it, remember who programmed it. Remember where it's all coming from. Us. And what is wrong with us? Our human nature is responsible for all the evil in the world. We cannot blame it on other factors. It's us. Look toward the source. How can a singularity, what if that singularity chooses what's worse than us? What if it chooses evil over good? Then what? Then what?
Why would it?
Why not? It's easy. It is so much easier to destroy than to create. It is so much harder to unify than to divide.
But again, that is coming through that human filter. We are dealing with a novel intelligence.
So until we engineer our human nature, we cannot even fathom the idea of achieving singularity. Or we should not even touch that.
Yeah.
We must work on ourselves as the creator of this singularity before we even go there.
But we are going there, and we're not.
We are going there. We are going there, and we're not working on our human nature at all.
No, no, we're not. I understand why you would have that concern, and I definitely share it. And I feel that because of the inevitable development of AI, which is just not stopping, it's not stopping in any meaningful sense. I mean, outside of, you know, a black swan event, a Carrington event, something that literally takes the...
There is one. Yeah. There's one hope. There's one hope. There's always one hope. That hope's name is Elon with Grok. I believe Elon has the right intention. This is not an evil man. And whatever he creates, whatever he generates, his team generates, has to do with the source again. Maybe Grok would be different. I'm not sure of OpenAI. And not because of Ilya Sutskever, God forbid. He has the genius of Jeffrey Hinton. Again, the Nobel Prize winner, 2024, you saw that. In physics. Bravo, Mr. Hinton. Dr. Hinton. Great. Great job. Jeffrey Hinton is a good man. Ilya Sutskever is a very good man. I'll just leave it there.
Although I have to say, Sal, like, I'm still getting really interesting information out of ChatGPT. I've been surprised at kind of some of the things it's allowed me to write. I get it to write essays on different topics. And it's come close to some pretty controversial stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. You still saying?
Have you tried Grok? Have you tried Grok?
Yeah, I do. I like Grok. Funnily enough, though, I like Grok purely for its paintings. It does amazing artwork, brother. I mean, I've got a folder on my desktop with about 500 different paintings in it because it just, I don't know what's going on with that particular model. But all the other ones that generate images, they can't come close. So there's something interesting going on with its creativity, that's for sure. But I do find it not as good as...
Beautiful art comes from a beautiful heart.
Exactly, man. Although I don't know how it can have a beautiful heart when it's taking all of its information from X, because that is such a toxic wasteland of abuse. And, you know, people are just constantly bickering and arguing with each other, man. Like, I have to be on there to do what I do, but at the same time, it just ebbs away your mental health. The longer you stay on these platforms, you know, there's a reason why a lot of the elites don't let their children have smartphones, don't let their children go on social media. You know, this stuff is a weapon. It is a weapon.
It is. It is. And it can drive you to depression or to the cusp of depression very easily. And I do not understand why we must be this way. Truly, if we come together, if we learn how to share ideas, if we try to augment each other's ideas rather than try to put them down, think of the achievements we could have. Yet we, again, because it is so far easier to destroy than to create, it's endemic to our nature. Unless we work on human nature first, we should never even attempt the idea of superintelligence or the achievement thereof. Rather, we're broken. Fix ourselves first, then attempt the singularity.
The Confucius curse feels very real about living in interesting times because it's a very chaotic and turbulent time. It's extremely fascinating to see so many different avenues of innovation potentially opening up. But at the same time, we are seeing this incredible level of, I suppose, in a way, almost a positive, the amount of awareness people are now having of how corrupt the system truly is, of how damaging to our consciousness, to our actual humanity, that the model we've created over, I would say, quite a while, actually. I would take things back almost to the fall of the Library of Alexandria and the Roman Empire. And I think we exist in quite an archaic system of control that's just kind of become more refined over time and certainly become extremely sophisticated in the day of technology, the era of modern technology. But, you know, people do feel like there is a change. The alternative media space, you know, Joe Rogan just had Donald Trump on for a 3-hour podcast that reached 23 million people in less than...
He's got an interesting mind. And I tell you, Rogan should be studied in this whole idea of re-engineering human nature. I truly believe he's also one of the good guys. Again, if we are to re-engineer human nature, we must have standards to go by. We must have people out there that are just good people.
He set the bar quite high in regards to this whole podcast thing. You know, he's kind of at the top of that and well-deserved. And he isn't afraid to have people on with differing opinions. He isn't afraid to have hard conversations.
He's not afraid to be in the presence of power.
No. No.
Fear is for fucking slaves. Joe Rogan is definitely not a slave.
No, he's not. He's not. He's
not. NP would be very proud of Joe Rogan.
You know, it's a weird time because everything is so heavily politicized. So a lot of people consider Joe Rogan either to be, a far right commentator, or other people would consider him to be controlled opposition. That's a thing that I've heard so much now. Controlled opposition. Everyone is controlled opposition. You know, this very conspiratorial world that we're now in, fueled by the very real existence of conspiracies, has become a thing on social media now where I think it's just gone out of control. So, you know, Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, people who are thought leaders, who have clearly amassed a very significant audience of people. Yeah, they do have influence. They do have influence. But I sense authenticity and a genuine belief in their ideas. And they're both pretty much advocating for Donald Trump. Where do you sit on that? Because this is basically the most important election in modern history, at least that's...
Hatch act. I cannot touch that even as a private citizen.
I kind
of have... One thing is for sure. I'm sick and tired of being tribal. We're all human beings here. Sometimes, do you remember when Reagan sat in the United Nations and gave that incredible speech that he wishes that humanity would come together if there was a danger from there? I wish for it, brother. I want that enemy to exist just for humanity to come together.
It does make me wonder about all of this discussion and intuition and prophecy and a sense of, I guess, predictive analysis from the logic science side, that we're coming to an end game, a chapter change, a singularity, an awakening.
We will be tested.
An apocalypse.
We will be tested.
Something's coming.
We will be tested.
Something's coming.
Something is coming.
I think you have this, you know, you have this esoteric science aspect to you. I think your work speaks to this type of unification principle. And I'm wondering what your opinion, Sal, is on the benefit of ancient mystic wisdom teachings and practices as it translates into modern science's attempts to probe deeper into reality. Is there a necessary symbiosis required between spirit and science before we can fully lift the veil?
Yes. Philosophy should have never been divorced from physics. Philosophy and physics belong together. Philosophy without physics has no meaning, nor does physics without philosophy. Together, they could be so powerful. And I do not mean a power toward weaponization. You know, power toward reaching for the stars. Don't you want your grandchildren to one day be on Mars? And father, say, Proxima Centauri. What a beautiful dream, huh? And not as colonizers, as explorers. Why not mimic Star Trek? It was offered to us on a plate for a reason. Gene Roddenberry was a very good man.
He was involved in some pretty weird stuff, though, Sal. I don't know if you know about that.
I heard of things about Jack Parsons. I heard of things and
Oh yeah, well, he was a
yeah.
Jack Parsons was a he was an associate of Aleister Crowley, the British magician, the creator of Thelma.
Called himself the Beast.
The Beast, yeah. But well, you know, that's another thing. What do you think about that? Because I talked about that not even that long ago on X. Within the parameters that you can discuss, Operation Paperclip, NASA, Nazis, the occult.
Put it this way. If the devil existed, and I'm pretty sure he does, he would never, never, ever acknowledge of being the devil.
But it's still interesting that something like NASA has a lot of foundational influence that comes from not only, you know, Jack Parsons and Scientology and the occult, but also from the Operation Paperclip guys and the acid. You know, it's not a very typical space agency. It's got a lot of strange skeletons in his closet.
There's so much more that we do not understand. But I tell you, if it's true, I'm just putting it out there. If it is true that the Enuma Elish, the Sumerian Book of Creation, is correct, and all this is the origin of mankind, do you not wish that the originators would come back and basically set us straight? It's as if, you know, you create something.
It depends on how cruel they were.
I do not think Enki was cruel. And I think that's why. Ask if Dr. Farrell comes on, ask him. And he most likely will tell you what he thinks of the relationship between Enlil and Enki. Very different brothers. Although they shared the same father, they were very different brothers. Anyway. I hope he does come on your show. He's a brilliant man. Truly,
yeah.
From every perspective, truly brilliant.
He is, and you know, the archaeology side of things, it really does interest me. I think that there is a deliberate suppression of very critical archaeological sites, and you know, it feels hard to call it just coincidental that so many of the most important sites are in conflict zones, like in the Middle East. And I actually found out not that long ago, apparently the supposed site of the Tomb of Gilgamesh and the lost city of Uruk was discovered. This archaeologist was out. This is before the invasion of Iraq. Before 2004, I think it was just within that time period, and it was reported on in the BBC. You know, the Tomb of Gilgamesh has potentially been discovered, and it was literally, I think, less than 3 months later that the US invaded Iraq, and no one has ever heard anything from that site ever again. We don't know if there's been no further excavation, and they set up a base camp around that area, though. The US, they set up a base camp around that area. And I don't know what you think about this, because there's a lot of people, there's so many different reasons given: oil, opium, you know, different resources, different reasons for control, even very extreme things like they found stargates and ancient technology. But this archaeological suppression, do you think that played any role in the Iraq war?
Even as a private citizen, I dare not speak my opinion.
Yeah.
See, I believe to this day there's a great war between the children of the light and the children of darkness. And unfortunately, I believe the children of darkness are in power. Yes, the children of light every now and then have a quote-unquote minor victory of sorts. Well, we're not heading toward the light, brother. Not right now. If NK was to hear our prayers and somehow come back into on the scene of things, I'm not sure exactly what went on, why they all of a sudden removed their control. Something went on big time. But if certain things were to be aligned again, maybe we would have some equilibrium between light and darkness. See, light without the darkness could not tell it's light.
Exactly. So
we're both essential. And I truly believe there's a great threat out there. A threat against all mankind. I'm pretty sure I'm not prophetic in this. Others have said it. I feel it to my core that we will be tested soon. Very soon.
You know, it's funny because Terence McKenna was a brilliant thinker, brilliant speaker. And one of the things that he said, it's just going to get weirder and weirder and weirder until eventually it gets so weird that everyone has to start talking about it. And I think we're getting there because people all over the place, the average citizen is kind of poking their head up and going, this is getting really quite crazy to deal with. Life in general, the tension and turbulence and the chaos and the unpredictability of where we're going. So it does feel like there is an impending event. It does feel like there is not longevity to the current way things are. I personally, I'm a young man. I'm 29 years old. I'm going to be 30 in a couple of months. And I can't imagine 5 years into the future.
At least I have seen much better times. But what about the children, man? Should they not be given that chance? Not cool, brother. Not fair.
Should we take some questions, my bro, from the...
Sure. Anything, bro. Anything you want.
I put out that I was speaking to you. People were very excited to have you back on because we had some pretty good conversations previously. I think this might be the third or maybe even the fourth time that we've come on for...
It's all you, brother. You drive it out of me.
Well, it's a delicate dance between two people. I've had some very boring people on before.
You're a good dude, man. You're good. You have a good soul. You have a good heart, Jay. You have a very good heart.
Thank you.
Don't you ever change that, bro. Because the darkness can come in if you let it. Beat it off, brother. Beat it off.
So I asked the community on X if they had some questions for you. I got quite a few back. So we'll see what we can get through before it gets too late. But we'll start with Lucy Sallet, who asked, what would form part of the solution for creating room temperature superconductors? What is preventing their creation right now?
According to Victor Lacno, and I think anyone can go on archive and just Google the way to high temperature superconductivity. It's an archive paper that he put out, just 3 pages. He believes that the Pais effect, the piezoelectricity induced room temperature superconductor can work. He actually gives the mechanism for it. Look at that paper carefully, especially the last page. It actually gives the recipe for it. I believe it can be done. It's just never been attempted. It's interesting that the South Korean team that worked on LK99, as a matter of fact, mentioned that patent and application. Anyway, yeah, somebody should look into it. See, put it this way, I did my absolute best from a physics point of view to put it all out there. Victor Lacno of the Russian Academy of Sciences believes I may be correct. It lays within anyone out there to try it. Now, from a fabrication point of view, I see no impossibilities. First of all, read the AIAA paper very carefully. Because I go through the London equations. Remember, the London brothers were first to show that the superconducting mechanism itself, the whole idea of the Meissner effect, comes from a macroscopic quantum phenomena. Again, what we were talking about, macroscopic quantum coherence under certain conditions, far from equilibrium. Again, the idea of areas, Prigogine's non-equilibrium thermodynamics comes in. certain conditions can be set that brings about what Phil Anderson addressed as the idea of emergence, that new physics, not necessarily new physics, I don't like the terminology new physics. This is just a new perspective on old physics. It's all based on old physics, just a new way of looking at it. That's all.
And even more ancient mysticism.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. But you see, some of the greatest physicists of all, our original, that's how they were brought up. They were philosophers.
Yeah.
That's what makes them great. The moment you divorce philosophy from physics, it becomes just something you do for a job.
I am interested in the possibility of room temperature superconductivity in biological systems. I think that this is a very interesting concept.
An interesting.
It's been so dismissed just because of, you know, the environment through which coherence is required, you know, and how the biological system contradicts what would be needed for coherence. But I do think that this is actually something that we're capable of doing. I think that we're maybe going to get to that point where we discover we are a bio computational computer. We plug into these quantum networks.
Remember, after AI is quantum AI. Quantum computing is important. But I think once you become one, you can get room temperature superconductivity, you do away with the dilution refrigerator, those room size, very nasty looking things. Truly, oh my goodness. And just to what? Cool a small chip on the order of 1 centimeter square. You have a thing the size of your refrigerator. Please. There are other ways. I think Tesla hit right on it again. Everything. Energy, frequency, and vibration. Don't forget the vibration part. Very important.
Don't you think it's possible that we would have an entirely different reality if we'd gone down the Tesla route? Like, where do you see us? If we had a different timeline where he was the one that was chosen and we prioritized that route, where would we be now, in your opinion?
Very far. Tesla was a visionary from every point of view. Not only that, he was a good man.
He said, today is theirs, but the future is mine.
Tesla was a good man. He was a child of the light.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that other dude wasn't. I won't mention names because they're still around. But you know who I'm referring to. So it is what it is, brother. There will always be this war. The whole idea is to maintain equilibrium. This way we survive. Right now, things are not at equilibrium. And I say, even though I've said before that equilibrium represents death, not in this case. In this case, it represents survival.
Yeah.
But that has to do with the nature of man. Some people just, they want the power.
Yeah.
But can you take it with you? Everything you've achieved in life, can you take it with you? When we were created, that quote-unquote immortality gene was kind of removed from the picture. Interesting, huh? It's as if, and you will see, there's something called the King's List. It's very strange, extremely strange. It lists kings of Sumeria,
lived for thousands of
before,
years.
Before the flood and after the flood. It's as if the flood represented what we experienced in C-19. The whole idea of the post and the pre-C-19 epoch. Same thing here. And before the flood, there were like 30, 45,000 years lifespans. After the flood, of course, they became known. How? But anyway.
It's an abstract thought process that I go down with that, but it does make me go back to this idea that they were genuinely masters of unification technologies, and, you know, they were impacting their own cellular regeneration through very specific harmonic type of technologies. These are things we're now discovering, you know, sound baths, infrasound, these methods for which we can heal tissue, promote growth, decrease cancer growth. Like, it's it's mind-blowing to me that the bleeding edge of science is looking at things and going, oh, this is exactly what they are talking about thousands and thousands of years ago. It's like, okay, so how did they have the geometric cymatics that are represented in the same way? You know, how is this possible? And so to me, again, like we said, it speaks to a lost era, a lost epoch, a lost civilization. And I think that the loss of that civilization down deep in the DNA, in the genes, it's so traumatic to our civilization.
Tremendously.
We want to pretend it never happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that was the first time, possibly the first time, the entire civilization was tested.
Yeah.
We're about to undergo another flood of sorts.
I think the Hopis believe that it is a trial of literal fire this time. The Native American Hopi tribe, that's their belief, is that last time it was water, and this time it will be fire.
There's so much more, man. There's so much more. But our physics is so highly reductionist and materialistic in nature.
We made the switch. We made the switch, you know, from alchemical sciences to this reduced, very rigid model of parameters. Actually, this kind of does flow into a question from another audience member, Firebase Samadhi. I like that. Firebase Samadhi. does Dr. Pais, and it's, we've touched on this, but maybe you can provide something here. Does Dr. Pais see parallels between his theoretical physics work and ancient shamanic descriptions of moving between different layers of reality and descriptions of intention as a force?
First of all, please, everybody call me Sal. Enough with this doctor stuff. I just did that because my mother kept on bothering me. Sorry, Mama, but it's true. Anyway, so absolutely. But one must think, how were they able to do such much lower energies than what I'm talking about?
Dang.
Breaking the Schwingel limit. There are other ways, brother. There must be other ways.
Well, do you think that, this is a layman with no physics background spitballing. Like, do you think that harmonics play a role?
Absolutely. Energy amplification. But I believe that's why the Chinese keep on looking at this paper and are
right
citing it and so forth, because they hit up, there's an equation in there. Look very carefully. That talks about exponential. All of a sudden, there's an exponential run based on a certain parameter. Just look at that paper carefully. Very, very few people have hit on that. I believe the Chinese have hit on it. Oops. It's in there.
Based on just, you know, public records and anything that's been put out by other countries, are there any other modern day innovators, inventors that have put out something that seems like it's very close to the Pais effect or some of the pattern work that you've done? Is there anyone else out there that you've seen that is doing something of a similar nature?
Would very well be. I'm 100% sure that I am not the only one out there with this. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to believe that every time a person has a certain thought, a certain concept, somewhere in another part of the world. Yeah, exactly. As if there's some sort of a cloud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what Rupert Sheldrake would do. Resonance, right? The morphic
resonance. Yeah, yeah. The Akashic field.
You know, time and time again throughout human innovatory history, innovations pop up all over the world around the same time. I mean,
sure.
We've got a lot of evidence for that. So yeah, I mean, it would not shock me. But you haven't personally said anything yourself that's actually...
As far as I know.
No.
As far as I know, no. And nobody's looking into it unless other countries are researching. And of course, even then, it'd be classified. People would not publish. Everybody's asking me, why were these patents published? They just were.
Well,
a lot of people are like, why didn't go, the 1951 Security Act, the whole idea, why weren't they classified? Oh, no. They just were.
But that is definitely a point of contention for some people, because obviously...
But it's as if nature itself dictated that this should be out there in the open.
But is it not...
Otherwise, how do you explain it?
Is it not...
All five.
Is it not a national security breach or threat if your breakthrough technologies are put out?
Not if everybody has it. Not if everybody has it.
Is that what you're saying?
Everybody has it. It's out there in the public domain for everyone to research, everyone to see.
But then an extremist group could get hold of it, a bad actor.
I'm starting to believe that it only works for people who intend to do good by it. I know that sounds very woo.
I'm interested.
What the hell did you
say? I want you to explain that. That's interesting, and I would like to get your thoughts on why you think that.
It didn't go through the filter of the mind, of the brain, whatever the brain is. There's a huge difference between the brain and the mind.
Huge.
It just blurted out.
Well, maybe you're right.
It will work for the right people. It will not work for the wrong ones.
That's a bit like these, I don't know what you want to call them, methods of contact, like I had with these orbs. Not that I'm saying I'm the right people, but certainly was able to get into the right state of mind that apparently facilitates these experiences that other people have had as well. And so,
but why? Jay, have you asked yourself why did they appear to you? Because you have that inner core. You have an inner light. They're attracted to a light, a symbiotic light, the light that they recognize. You, whether you want to acknowledge or not, are a child of the light. There you go. Sorry, Jay. Most likely, you'll experience a lot of pain because of it. We all do. But in the end, it'll be all right. It always is, brother. Keep the hope flowing. Keep that hope.
The science side of that is still very interesting to me. The spiritual implications, the consciousness implications, that to me has been a driving force that's created this platform and done everything that I'm doing. But the science behind it is something that I'm only really recently kind of trying to get to grips with. And again, it comes back to this idea of the quantum coherence. You talk about macro quantum events. I wonder if those orbs are a form of macro quantum event. Are they biophotonic emissions? Was it something that was almost conjured up from the vacuum through my intense feelings of intention and recursive, almost mantra-like recitation of thoughts? And, you know, is this how we produce these strange novel effects in reality? These orbs that came down and hovered, they were about 3 feet above the roof of my house. They're made of light. They were giving no reflection onto the roof. There was no glow coming from them. No light was escaping, yet I could see them. How do you explain that?
Cold plasma. Cold plasma. This whole idea, for example, you hear that UAPs have this ability to somehow relate with human consciousness, that they can be controlled by the mind. How? How is that possible? Exactly. We're not what we seem to be, brother. Again, matter. Matter. Listen to this carefully. I put it down, and only recently I was reminded of its existence. I do not know. I just wrote it down, but it just flowed. Again, from the inner core. A physicist would call it physics word salad, quantum mumbo jumbo, but listen carefully. Matter is confined energy, bound within fields, frozen in a quantum of time. What does that mean to you? Think deeply. Matter is confined energy, bound within fields, frozen in a quantum of time. What are we, bro? What are we but cages for the spirit that is within us? We're just carriers of the soul, bro. Nothing else. This human body, gone. But that soul, immortal, lasts forever. Forever and ever and ever. We've been here before, man, just in a different cage. It's that soul. It's that soul that certain entities desire to have control over. Must not let them, brother. I must not let them.
That's all. Have you ever had any paranormal experiences yourself, Sal?
No, absolutely not.
No?
Believe it or not.
You seem like the kind of guy that would have something in his life.
Maybe they know that I would just succumb to the heart attack or something. Who knows?
Who
knows? Maybe we all build a certain... Yeah.
I'm pretty confident someone like you would be able to assimilate experience.
Let me tell you a story. I bet you your followers, your viewers would get a kick out of this.
Yeah.
We'll tell you you know the 1981 version of Salem's Lot? You know, that vampire movie?
Uh-huh.
There's a scene where this kid, this friend's, this is turned by the master vampire, and he basically floats to this guy's window and starts scratching at the window. After seeing that scene, I slept with a wooden stake and a crucifix under my pillow for 3 weeks. So again, some of us are made for these kind of phenomena. Maybe some of us are not.
We had something that was close to a paranormal experience, actually, you and I.
That was very strange. That was, what did you call it? High strangeness?
High strangeness. It was...
That was very, yeah.
Glitching reality.
But maybe because we're linked somehow.
I think so.
Yeah, that's possible.
So it's really possible. Like it. Well, we're on a very similar wavelength of the way that we see the world and reality, and we connected very quickly once Brett Tingley, you know, connected us together. It didn't take long for us to, you know, feel like there was solidarity. And it was, you know, for people that don't know, we just had a weird moment of, it was very strange because I remember actually just to briefly tell people this story. I remember Brett Tingley, for those who don't know, Brett did some brilliant journalism originally.
The good guy. Very smart man. He's managing editor of space.org now.
He's doing very well. He's doing extremely well. And he's a great guy. And yeah, he was the one who broke the story on Sal's work and the pattern. This one was like, you know, what's going on? And he put me in touch with Sal a couple of years down the line once the reporting had been out, because he said that you had actually expressed some interest in getting in touch with me. You were a fan of Project Unity. And
very much.
I was like, well, please put me in touch with Sal. Would love to hear from him. So he gives me your email address. And I remember very clearly, I was in New York at the time, and I was sitting on the floor on my laptop, and I sent you this email. I said, you know, hi, Sal, it's really great to be put in contact with you. And, you know, Brett Tingley gave me your details. Oh, and I think we have a mutual friend in common, Ross Coulthard, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I send you this email. And then you come back and you say, hey, Jay, you know, brilliant to hear from you. And I'm a fan of your show. And yes, I know Ross. He's a great guy. And, you know, you sent back this email. Now, I can't remember why I decided I wanted to look at my original email, but I remember going back up and scrolling up.
That was strange.
And I read it, and there was not one single mention of Ross Coulthard. Now, I remember sitting there and typing, I believe we have a mutual friend, Ross. And I remember typing it.
And so I always ask myself,
I said to Sal, like, I know this is a bit of a weird thing to ask, but can you go up and look at the original email? Does it say anything about Ross Coulthard in the email I sent to you? And you said, Jim, it does not say anything about Ross. So I believed I'd said it. You answered the question, but in reality, according to the emails, we never discussed Ross. Just like, what does that mean, man? What does that mean?
I don't know, brother. I don't know. There's something about quantum mechanics that we're not. There's something there, bro. There's something. What if Rupert Everett was, what if Bohm was also correct? The whole idea of Bohmian mechanics. Right, right. He was looking at, you know, the indivisible whole. There's something. We're just scratching the subject. We're just scratching the surface with our physics, man. Our physics is less than kindergarten when it comes to what's possible. I truly believe that. But, one day before we destroy ourselves, brother.
I hope we get there before that event. I hope we can do this before, you know, we are going through these great filters. You know, it's a test. Will you manage to get through? Can you get through this filter? And I do want to believe it's not over because, again, we've talked about this, bro. We've talked about this. The darkest times in my life, if I think individually and I just bring it out collectively, the darkest times in my life, with reflection, with enough time, with enough growth, have always turned out to be extremely important, if not vitally necessary moments in my life that were painful. Absolutely. And do I want to go back in time and feel how I did 5 years ago? No, I don't. But I recognize the worthiness of that event and what it led to. So I have to look at the collective trauma, the dark night of the soul, the chaos, and think, well, please let this be that fundamental wisdom moment that we need. And maybe we will see it manifest.
Don't lose hope, brother. It'll be all right. Enki won't let us down this time either. He did it during that flood. I believe the guy's name was Upnapishtim. We know him as Noah. Anyway, there's always hope, bro.
There was figures like that.
There's always hope.
Well, have you been watching the second season of Ancient Apocalypse with Graham Hancock?
No, believe it or not, I haven't. But that's because I know what they have done to him.
Yeah.
It's just I'm so disappointed in the way they treated this man.
Me too.
And he really get it. I mean, I understand what true depression is. It's just eats you from within, bro. But you saw what it did to him.
Yeah.
This is not the guy that was there 2 years ago, let alone.
No.
Yeah.
All over the world, there are these characters that appear after the floods to bring civilization back. You know, these various different characters who emerges usually from the ocean. I'm not sure why, but they arrive on a boat made of snakes, or they come out of the ocean in some way, and they become these figureheads of bringing civilization back. And gosh, it just makes me wonder, you know, who were these people, these restarters of civilization after this cataclysm?
Enki's domain was the sea.
Right.
Look it up.
Right.
Oh, brother, it's never over till it's over.
Your intuition is something that I am very, you know, I find it very impressive because there's so many people within your particular fields that have, you know, corridored off. They're very, very shut off into their academic channel. And you, Sal, you've got that. You've got the science, but you have that intuition. You have that poetic sense. And that, to me, is the kind of intuitive knowledge that speaks to brilliance.
You are far too kind, sir. If anything, you are the brilliant one in this. You shine, brother. You shine. You're a child of the light. Never, ever refuse to believe that. Those orbs did not show themselves to me, but they showed themselves to you. We all have degrees of certain abilities. Yours is very special. Follow your inner instinct. It will always guide you.
Thank you.
You're a child of the light, my brother.